today on Mother Mayhem.
I really do think it's important that you validate that part for yourself. You're not mad for no reason. You're not jealous for no reason. Your experiences impacted you, and your feelings make sense for what you've experienced. Hi, it's Heather. Welcome back to Mother Mayhem, the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Podcast for Daughters. Today, I get to introduce you to Emily. If you were to ask her to describe herself, she might tell you that she's a fuck-up, that she ruins everything good in her life, and that she is no better than her narcissistic mother. If you let me describe her, you will hear that she's carrying a lot of shame, that she is in so much pain that she shoots first and asks questions later, that she's scared of her anger, and that she holds jealousy that makes her feel even more shame. She's not going to believe me on this one, but she became an instant favorite of mine. That's why I named her Emily. You see, back in the day, I worked in residential treatment for adolescent girls. I don't know if I told you guys this before. I must have. It's a huge part of my life. In any case, I think the statute of limitations on this has probably expired. So now I can tell you that I worked there for 10 years and the student, Emily, was one of my favorites. Now, obviously, we weren't supposed to have favorites, but also, of course, we did. And Emily was most definitely one of mine. Now, she had a rough deal in life, so much trauma, and every time something was about to get good, she would wreck it and self-sabotage because she just didn't believe good things were meant for her. I feel pretty confident in saying that I was her favorite too, so of course that's why she had to be especially mean to me at times, and why she had to imply that I was no good at my job and that she hated me, even though she was also the kid who would ask for last check-in at bedtime, because she figured out at one point that the kids who got the last check-in also ended up oftentimes getting extra time. Oh my gosh, so much sass in that one. She also had so much pain to overcome, but man, like, I loved that kid, and she had heart. She so wanted to be good, even when she was being awful. Once she relapsed on drugs, she made me watch her do it, and then told me doing it was her fault. And yes, still a favorite of mine after all of that. Now, Emily, the podcast listener, you are probably already irritated with me because you don't want me to like you in that way, and you don't want me thinking of you in that way. You want me to think, and you would probably be more comfortable with me thinking, that you're a piece of shit that's irredeemable. I hate to break it to you, kid, but the irredeemable ones don't write into trauma recovery podcasts asking for help in cutting the shit. So, Emily, I see you. I hear your hurt, your pain, your regret, and I see your hopelessness too. I know all of this is very, very real for you, and I do think I can help. So here's Emily, and here's her story. Hi, Heather. I'm wondering if we can stop talking about trauma survivors like we're all angels. There's this thing going on in the way survivors are talked about that implies we're all innocent, that we're all just crying and hurting, and we're all doing the work, doing our best, and the narcissists are the only evildoers. While I will be the first person to tell you that my mom has done some fucking evil things, I also have to tell you that I have too. Trauma survivors, we aren't all innocents doing our best. Can we just talk about how trauma fucks us up sometimes, and as a result, we do really fucked up things? This week, I had to bring not one, but two bouquets of flowers to a woman at work. I owed her a really big apology, and when I got to the store, I didn't think one bouquet would cut it. She's an older woman, close to retirement. I know this because she has a countdown calendar on her desk that she's quite proud of. She came over to me the other day and said, and I quote, "Hey, you've been working so hard, and I thought that new account just got added to your plate, so I took care of doing XYZ for you." What is XYZ, you might be wondering? Only the most pain in the ass part of my job, and without me asking, she just took care of it for me. She was so nice. And I know this now. But in the moment, all I heard was that I wasn't doing my fucking job and that I needed a rescue. So I snapped at her. Did I ask you to do that? Why don't you mind your own business and focus on your job instead of worrying about mine? She was so crushed, Heather. Instantly, I could see she wasn't actually being an asshole. She really was trying to help, and the thing she helped me with actually saved me so much time. And of course, I immediately apologized and I started stammering about how I reacted too quickly and all of that. But shit, Heather, I hurt her. I know I did. And this isn't the first time that I've gone and done something like that. I've also been fighting with my sister, or to put it more accurately, picking fights with my sister. My sister, she just has it together. She has friends. She has activities. She's doing okay. Neither of us talk to her mom anymore, but my sister, she's just okay. Me? I just fucking mess shit up. Like the woman at work, my sister hasn't even done anything wrong other than not be fucked up by her mother like I was, and I'm just so mad and jealous about that. I feel like she kept herself together somehow and actually got better at everything once we cut her mom out, and I'm the fuck up. I wreck good relationships. Apparently, I practically knock well-meaning ladies down at work. Oh, dear. Not. Oh, Emily, I like you so much. Oh, my gosh, I love this letter. Apparently, I practically knock well-meaning ladies down at work. Not literally, but you know what I mean. Oh, Emily, I feel you on this. I know all about how this is trauma brain. I know how trauma's affected me. But when does it stop making me asshole number one? And can we just fucking admit that trauma makes us assholes sometimes? You haven't really done an episode with an asshole. So allow me to be the first. Please tell me what the hell I'm supposed to do. I don't like myself. I don't like who I'm becoming or how angry I am or how jealous I am. And I just want to stop the shit. Please just help me cut the shit. Oh, Emily, man, I like you. All right. I can hear your hurt. I hear your shame and your confusion and all of this. And I gotta know here, you are by no means the only one who's mucking it all up. You're one of the first brave ones to write in and say so, but I have a feeling I'm gonna get a lot of deep confessions after your episode now. You already know about trauma brain, and it's causing you that fight, flight, and freeze response. And you seem to be caught up a little bit in fight. Now, that might be because fight has been the thing that has your back all along. Maybe you managed your mom with some fight and with some attitude, and your fight is just how you got through, how you protected yourself, and how you prevented yourself from feeling all of that pain that comes from a childhood with your narcissistic mother. Or maybe you actually never got to fight with her. Maybe you had to be quiet, acquiesce, and just take it. And now you're realizing that you don't have to take it. You can fight back in every single way that you never got to as a kid. You might just be so sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, and you're ending up feeling mad all the time. And Emily, I know your anger feels really out of control right now, and because of that, you're feeling a lot of shame about it, but also, we have to be honest about this if we're going to talk about your anger and admit that mad also feels good in the moment that it's set off. We feel large, we feel in charge and impenetrable even. And of course, that's only until it catches up with us and we catch up with ourselves a little bit in that moment that we realize the mess we made. But right now, you are at war with your anger. And it feels, I know, like your anger's winning. But also, my friend, your anger really has your back. Your anger's the part of you that recognizes what you never had and always deserved. Your anger is the part of you that recognizes that your life today is harder for you because you didn't get the love, nurturance, acceptance, or guidance that you needed as a kid. As much as you hate it, what happened at work the other day makes a lot of sense to me. Daughters of narcissistic mothers, all of you are used to being criticized and you're used to being held to those impossibly high standards. You're probably also used to scanning ahead of every single situation to read the room, avoid the tension, dodge criticism. You're used to being on top of all of it. That's the way your body's wired, and that is the body memory you have around criticism. So, of course you believe your body. It has protected you before, and it's probably been right far more often than it's been wrong. So your body and your trauma brain, you just couldn't differentiate from your mother's criticism and a more innocent comment made by a coworker. And that's because of that physical rush that came to you when you heard your coworker offer you some help. Now, the first thing we're going to have to do together is get you paying attention to that rush. Now, you likely feel an intense rush of energy in your body. You might flood with heat. Your hands might end up in a fist, and maybe your jaw is getting set a little bit in those moments. But right there, that is your cue to step back. When you feel a rush in your body, your first order of business is to respond to your body and take care of that. So your challenge is going to be to take a beat, to take a moment, to take a breath, and remind yourself that sometimes this isn't that. Now, your first instinct is going to be to think you're under attack. And if it's an attack, just a reminder here, you already know how to do that part. You'll be fine. If you need to defend yourself, you can go and do that later. But right now, not slowing down is what's actually getting you upset with yourself. You don't feel in control, and we want you to feel in control of yourself. Right now, it's actually peace that you don't know how to deal with, because peace is actually where you have less practice, unfortunately. So you are gonna have to go easy on yourself and just remind yourself that this part, the part when it's good, is the part that you don't know how to do. You're going to have to work with yourself to stay calm and to stay neutral, to not react to your first thought as if it's true. And you're going to have to work on finding those strategies that help you calm your body. Anger, it creates a lot of intense energy. So odds are for you and for most people listening too, because I promise you, you are not the only one managing anger right now. There's going to be no such thing for you, Emily, as just calming down, taking a few breaths, thinking things through. So your first order of business is actually going to be to get moving, not in the fight way where you throw a punch. I hopefully don't need to say that part out loud. But again, the Emily I used to work with did throw some punches sometimes. So we're not working on building that fight response. We're working on getting that energy out of your body. We want you taking the stairs. We want you walking around the block. Maybe you go and hide in a restroom and you do some jumping jacks. You want to push that energy, that intense feeling that you're feeling inside of your body. We want to push that out of you. And I want you picturing letting that energy leave your body. In those moments, you're going to need to reassure yourself and your trauma brain that no matter what, you will be able to have a response. It's not like it was with your mom. You're just simply taking a moment before you react, because the way you've been reacting isn't working for you. You're waiting because you want to feel more in control of yourself. Once the intensity of that energy's calmed down a bit for you, then you can check in with yourself about how you want to respond and what you want to say. Now, the other part of this, Emily, is recognizing that part of why this is happening for you is that trauma brain has, in a way, globalized your experience of how you see the world. So how you experienced your mother is now how you're anticipating everyone is going to be. The way this happens sometimes is we know that trauma survivors often find themselves repeating the trauma patterns because that's what it feels familiar. I can't just say to you right now, hey, your work isn't like your childhood. Just tell yourself you're not there anymore and move on. Because I have no way of knowing, and maybe you did unconsciously pick a working environment that echoes your childhood because that environment felt predictable and familiar. In moments like this, when I'm giving advice in this way, it feels a little bit risky for me to say, and it's going to feel risky for you to hear that maybe your work isn't like that. So here's what I want to say instead. Your trauma brain protected you with your mom and with your childhood, but you don't have contact with your mom anymore, and you aren't a kid anymore. So part of calming down your fight response means you have to regularly remind yourself that you weren't there anymore, that you aren't a kid, you aren't with your mom, and that it is okay to look around the world with new eyes and get curious about what it is you see. Your brain is wired to scope out risk, to protect you. So a way to get grounded and calmer and less reactive is always going to be starting to train your brain to look for the signs that you're safe, that people are good, and that this isn't that. Trust yourself that if you did in fact pick an abusive working environment or anything else like that, that mimics your childhood, that you will do what you already know how to do because you already did it with your mom. You went no contact. You can do that with anything you might need to now, but the task is before you to start collecting the evidence that you're safe, that you are in places and with people that allow you to be who you are and where you can speak freely. And I hear you on this, Emily. This is happening everywhere in your life right now. So I think you do need to do a little bit of a safety inventory of your life. I think a part of your struggle here is that you haven't actually caught up with yourself. You and your sister stopped talking to your mom. But if you haven't cued yourself that the danger's over, or if you don't actually believe the danger's over, you are going to keep moving through the world as if everything is a threat. So take some time to check in with yourself. Review with yourself where you live, where you work, who your friends are, the relationships you're in, and see how safe you feel in them and what might you need to start feeling safer. Your body might be struggling with staying regulated either because there's actually still an active threat that needs to be addressed or because you simply haven't caught up with yourself and cued your body to know that it's safe. Emily, like I said, I named you after one of the girls I used to work with in residential. And one of the things that I had to do with her and with the girls like her is actually physically walk around the house and show her and them that the doors were locked, that the windows were locked, and that there were staff at the desk. I would be suggesting this for you too, to regularly do that equivalent for yourself in your own life, to know that you're worthy of being reassured and reassure yourself on repeat that you are safe, that you got yourself out, and that the threat has passed. Build a habit out of cueing your body to know that it's safe. Keep working on that habit of slowing yourself down anytime your feelings come at you in a huge, gigantic physical rush like that. That is going to be key to getting you out of that fight or flight response. Then, my friend, what we have to start doing is building your awareness for yourself of what is working. You're uber aware right now that your anger is out of control and that you're struggling with jealousy, but you, my friend, are so much more than your worst moments. You have clearly done some work. You have clearly saved your own life. And while the work thing has you tense and embarrassed, something about the way you showed up there with that woman, she wanted to help you out. Some of the ways you show up at work motivated this woman to want to show up for you. If you can pay attention to that part, even though the rest of the story is so hard for you, maybe you're going to see that you don't entirely suck. Just like the safety inventory, I think you need to do an inventory of yourself and your life that acknowledges the things that you like, the things that are going well, the things that you're proud of. What are the meaningful habits that you've stuck with for yourself? How are your friendships? How do you like your home? We know the parts of you that you want to change. What are the parts of you that you don't? Naming the things that you like, that are working, or that you think simply don't suck about you is a helpful habit for you to get in. Now, I know it's going to take you a little bit of time to settle your anger. So in the meantime, we want you to be able to add an and to your story and to your personal narrative. I am struggling with my anger and I am being trusted with more responsibility at work. I am struggling with being jealous and I am someone who people like. I sometimes do get angry and mean, and I have also been a good friend or a good listener. You are not just the things you don't like about yourself. You are also all of these other things too. So if you are going to hold your feet to the fire on what you don't like, you have to hold on to what you do in equal measure, even if it doesn't feel like they're equal to you. Then we have to get honest about what you already know about trauma. It leaves a mark. Moving through the world is harder for you. Relationships are harder. You struggle with things that other people don't struggle with. The lens through which you look at the world has been impacted by your trauma, and you experienced this at your job the other day. Sometimes trauma brain has you looking at the world and reacting to the world with a broken lens. That is why, after all, we say that hurt people sometimes. That's the exact reason why that tends to happen. So right now, you have two areas of your life that you have identified aren't working for you: your anger and your jealousy. So right now, those are the things you're going to work on. There is so much to the rabbit hole of trauma and recovery, and it is so easy to get yourselves really overwhelmed. I always have my clients focus on what is rising to the top and what is coming to the surface. We don't need to go digging on an excavation. We just need to look at the things that are rising to the surface that don't work for you and give those things some of your attention. We covered your anger a little bit. Now let's sit together and dig into your jealousy. I imagine at times that your anger and your jealousy probably feel like two sides of the same coin. You might be feeling jealous all the time, and the same way you find yourself feeling angry all the time. And again, this is you becoming keenly aware of everything you never had, but always deserved. And I really do think it's important that you validate that part for yourself. You're not mad for no reason. You're not jealous for no reason. Your experiences impacted you, and your feelings make sense for what you've experienced. Now, so your jealousy, we're just going to go direct on it. So jealousy on its own, Emily, it's just a feeling. It has no power over us. Like any feeling, it is just energy, and we can use that energy it creates inside us, and we can use that energy to make us bigger, or we can use it to make ourselves smaller. And I want you to clearly hear me on this, Emily. Jealousy all on its own, it's not inherently malicious. It isn't even irrational. Your jealousy is identifying the things that you want that you feel like you can't have right now. So let me just give you this quick cheat sheet, if you will, on jealousy, because it makes sense to me and I want it to make sense to you too. I want you to start thinking about how you can be a better friend to yourself. And it starts with understanding this feeling you're having that you don't like about yourself. Now, first, we know that as a child of a narcissist, you didn't get a lot of validation as a kid. And as a result, that is often going to have you questioning your self-worth. You doubt your abilities and you end up feeling insecure about yourself. So when you see your sister is more capable than you, of course you get jealous. But also, I wonder if you've ever actually shared your perception of your sister with your sister and see and check in with her and see if you're actually right about all of this. Because the shrink here, right? So I'm going to get a little psychobabble on you, but I got to remind you that she's the daughter of a narcissist too. And she may not want to be burdening you. She may not want to take up space for you or have you worrying about her. You are both apples from the same tree, my friend, and you might come out different, but still it's the same tree. So don't be afraid to check in with her about her, your perceptions of her, and to talk to her about how you've been experiencing all of this. And Emily, I can't help but wonder if you and your sister, maybe you were compared by your mom as kids. And again, psychobabble might be running amok here and I might not know what I'm talking about. But siblings in general are going to naturally compare themselves to each other. But when a narcissistic parent's involved, that is going to intensify that experience. And it is going to program you practically to have all of these feelings of envy and inadequacy. Because if this started for you guys as kids, it is a well ingrained habit in your psyche now. I hope it makes a little bit of sense to you now that like constant comparison would naturally fuel some jealousy and even resentment for having a set of standard needs that need to get met. Because at the root of narcissistic abuse is this pattern of behavior your moms had toward all of you. That pattern is going to be rooted in repeated rejection and repeated abandonment. The roots of jealousy, of course, are going to be impacted and pulled on by those same fears of rejection and abandonment. Part of what we're addressing here, Emily, is something that in the psychobabble world we call hyperarousal and hypervigilance. Now, people automatically hear the word arousal and think I'm talking about sexual response. That isn't what we're talking about. Hyperarousal refers to this heightened emotional sensitivity and reactivity. And I think that might be what you're dealing with here, along with the hypervigilance that often comes alongside that, that's what has you scanning and measuring and assessing. And it's because of that hyperarousal and hypervigilance that you find yourself having this big reaction to things that might otherwise be or feel normal or harmless or ordinary. Now, trauma also, it's going to affect your relationship patterns and your responses. We've talked about it before on the show, but please just let me repeat myself here. You might have either an anxious attachment style, an avoidant attachment style, or a disorganized attachment style. And the way you see yourself in response to your relationships is also going to be something that informs your perspective and that can sometimes lead to jealousy when you're not tuned into that part of yourself. And Emily here, it also strikes me a little bit that you see yourself as largely out of control, while you see your sister as largely in control. Of course, you think that you're the hot mess and your sister has it together. You're gonna get jealous. But there's a tricky thing about jealousy. It starts because the trauma brain's habit is to scan for risk. Trauma brain wires you for protection. But what is screaming out at me from your letter is that you desire connection. You just don't know how to believe yourself worthy of having it or how to get yourself there. So your habit of scanning others is creating a lot of pain for you. And it's programming you to be jealous on steroids. But when you look at yourself, you are only seeing your shame, your failings, and the things that aren't working or the ways that you are that you wish you weren't. Being less jealous is going to happen for you once you start building that better relationship with yourself. I'm not sure you know yourself very well, and I'm pretty positive here that you don't have an accurate read of who you are or what you bring to the table. Yeah, we have to get you working on your anger and lowering your responses to jealousy. Of course we have to do that because they're not working for you. But also, my friend, we got to get you liking yourself more. The things you're struggling with, they're really common for daughters of narcissists. And at the root of narcissistic abuse recovery is always going to be building a better relationship with yourself. We have talked about this over and over again on the show, so I'm not going to repeat myself too much here, but we did review it just a few weeks ago back in episode 40, Rediscovering You. And then we talked about it again in episode 32, Starting Narcissistic Abuse Recovery. And then we also did it in an episode we did back in episode 26, From Struggle to Strength. Don't go binging on them. You're going to get overwhelmed, but set an intention for yourself to go back and give those episodes a listen. And don't forget the core foundational episode that if you only ever listen to one episode of this show ever, I always tell people it's the third episode. I am going to link to all of those in the show notes for you guys as a reminder. And Emily, I've given you a lot to do here. And I hope in doing that you see a path out of this. I know that you're not going to be able to just sit with me and listen to me as I talk to you about your shame. I know if I led with all of that or any of that, you wouldn't have been able to hear me or believe me. But now that I've given you some of the groundwork and some more of the tactile things that you can do, I'm really hoping you'll hear me on this. I think you think that you deserve your shame. You see all the ways you're acting out right now. You see where you're creating disruptions and how you've hurt people. And you think that that is the natural consequence, that that is the cost of your actions. We talk a lot about on the show how your mothers can't hold accountability. They can't name what they did or the impact of their actions on other people. And as her daughter, you never want to be her. So as a result, you end up holding yourself highly accountable. That's often where shame starts. Fear of being your abuser and wanting to be anything but. Also, too, my friend, we know your mom did a number on you, and shame pops up all the time as you're healing because she undermined your self-worth, and she did it repeatedly, and she used all of her machinations and all of her tactics to manipulate you. She used shame to manipulate you. She criticized you. She controlled you, and she did this so often and so repeatedly that at this point, for you, you've internalized probably a lot of her messaging, and it has started to become your own truth about yourself. When we add to this the idea that a lot of the coping mechanisms that people choose after being abused can be attached to shame, there ends up being a pile-on effect. Sometimes substance abuse happens, relationship sabotage happens. We know you all can get into these spirals of people-pleasing and perfectionism, and all of those things are things that are going to magnify your shame for you as well. Here's where you need to land on this. Shame isn't working for you. It isn't serving you. It isn't making you feel better. It isn't helping you not screw up. Here's what works with shame: challenging your negative self-talk and your inner critic, knowing what your shame triggers are so you can learn the coping strategies for yourself that actually work. You want to keep practicing vulnerability like you did with the woman at work, and I would encourage you to do that with the same with your sister. Find the supportive and understanding people that you can connect with and talk to about this stuff, just like you did here. Now, the Emily I named you after, she would have rolled her eyes at all of this and told me to fuck off. But I want you to think about this for a second. try mantras. And again, you can all roll your eyes and tell me to fuck off, but please just maybe try them anyway. You are so used to beating yourself up, so you have to replace your negative self-talk with positive statements about yourself that you actually have buy-in into. You want to build the relationship you have with yourself so that you can see all of your parts, not just the parts of you that you don't like. In tied with this, I would say, I'd like you to consider a forgiveness ritual for yourself. Of course, ask for forgiveness from anyone you might need to who is safe to do so with. But more importantly, we need you to forgive yourself. Now, there's a couple of statements I like for this. First, Brené Brown, y'all know this by now about me, that she's one of my heroes, and she always likes to say, I did the best I could with the tools I had at the time. That, to me, is a really good mantra. It's a really good part of a forgiveness ritual, and it's a really good way to show yourself grace while also holding real-life accountability. There's another one I like by Maya Angelou. She has a statement, do your best until you know better, and then when you know better, do better. But you want to look at your actions, why you did what you did, and recognize how you got here for yourself, as well as your plan for getting out. Then I think you can work on letting go. Oh, there I go, using the letting go analogy a couple episodes after Anna and Elsa. Hi, Anna and Elsa. Thinking of you. Now, Emily, you might need to let it go every day for a little while, but eventually you are going to find your way to peace. Also, Emily, you did real good for yourself here by reaching out to me, by speaking your truth. I talked to you about how I wanted to turn this into a social media post too, and you gave me permission to read your letter. You're getting honest with yourself and your struggle. You're doing all of this, and you didn't die, my friend. Maybe I was even able to help you in a way, but I think you helped yourself a lot here. I'm also going to tell you my triple dog dare for you right now is to please consider sharing this episode with your sister and talking to her about this. But by connecting with me here and being honest with me, I hope that alone starts to change and shift the story you started writing about yourself. Because Emily, I really do think I see you a little bit here. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to get even cheesier than cheesy. And I want to share one last thing about the real Emily that I named you after. I used to read to her and the other kids an excerpt from the book, The Velveteen Rabbit. It's a piece that's become a mantra for me in my own life, so much so that my husband and I had it as a reading in our wedding. And years after the real Emily and I worked together, I got a letter from her. I told you I was one of her favorites too. And that letter was a picture of her with her daughter. And we're all going to ignore how old that makes me. She was reading her daughter, The Velveteen Rabbit. And she was holding the same printout of it with the note that I had given her when she graduated. Now, I know through the grapevine and all of that, that she had quite a few screw-ups even after we worked together. But also, she became a mom who read her daughter The Velveteen Rabbit and who kept the piece of paper an old counselor had given to her. That means that she chose to believe she was capable of more, even when everything about her life would have made a contrary argument. Just as I believed in her, I believe in you. You showed up. You asked for help. You're further along than you think. And now, if it's okay with you, I'd like to read you that excerpt too. Hold on to it. You are in a community of women around the world who are in this with you, listening to this with you, and I am too. What is real? Asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender, before Nana came to tidy the room. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you were made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a really long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes, said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up, he asked, or bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or who have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been lopped off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you're real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. Bye for now. I'm so grateful that you're here. You're right where you're supposed to be. At its heart, I'm hoping to use this show to build a community of women working together to heal from childhoods marked by maternal narcissism and emotional neglect. My goal for Mother Mayhem is that this show becomes an advice and mentoring-driven show where you share your questions, struggles, and stories, and I offer you direction for healing and recovery. That can't happen without your contributions. I invite you to send a recorded voice memo or write in an email with your questions and things you're struggling with. You can always find me over at heather@daughtersnpd.com. To connect further, I invite you to find me over at Instagram and occasionally on TikTok at daughtersnpd. If you know another woman who needs this conversation in her life, I'm going to ask that you share the show with her. You can help me get the word out with your reviews and social shares of the show, and I hope you'll consider doing so. Special thanks to Heather Clark for editing this show. She's in my head and knows what I meant to say when the words come out backwards. Thanks for your time today. I'm always in it with you. Bye for now.